Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Shuklat prakasha bhuyishtal
lokan apnoti karhichit
dukho darkan kriyayashams
tamakshokot katan kvachit.
Translation, those who are situated in the mode of goodness act piously according to Vedic injunctions. Thus they are elevated to the higher planetary systems where the demigods live. Those who are influenced by the mode of passion engage in various types of productive activities in the planetary systems where human beings live. Similarly, those influenced by the mode of darkness are subjected to various types of misery and live in the animal kingdom. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. There are three planetary systems, upper, middle, and lower. Those influenced by the mode of goodness are given places in the upper planetary systems. Brahmaloka or Satyaloka, Tapoloka, Janaloka, and Maharaloka. Those influenced by the mode of passion are given places in the Bhur Loka and Bhuvar Loka. Those influenced by the mode of ignorance are given places in, it's a longer list, Atala, Vitala, Sutala, Tatala, Mahatala, Rasatala, Patala, and the animal kingdom. Very populated place. Qualitatively, the living entity is the same as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but because of his forgetfulness, he gets different bodies in different planetary systems. At the present moment, human society is overly influenced by the mode of passion. And consequently, people are engaged in working in big factories. They forget how distressful it is to live in such places. In Bhagavad Gita, such activities are described as ugra karma. That is, distressful activities. Those who utilize the energies of the worker are called the capitalists. And those who actually perform the work are called the laborers. In actuality, they are both capitalists. And the workers are in the mode of passion and ignorance. Interesting sentence. Should I read that again? Those who utilize the energies of the worker are called capitalists, and those who actually perform the work are called laborers. In actuality, they're both capitalists. And the workers are in the modes of passion and ignorance. The result is that there is always a distressful situation. In contrast to these men are those influenced by the mode of goodness, the karmis and gyanis. The karmis, under the direction of Vedic instructions, try to elevate themselves to higher planetary systems. The gyanis try to merge into the existence of Brahman the impersonal feature of the Lord. In this way, all classes of living entities in various species of life are existing within this material world. This explains superior and inferior life forms within the material world. Shuklat prakasha bhulyashtal lokan apnoti karhachit dukho darkan kriya vasams tamak shokot katan kochit. Those who are situated in the mode of goodness act piously according to Vedic injunctions. Thus they are elevated to the higher planetary systems where the demigods live. Those who are influenced by the mode of passion engage in various types of productive activities in the planetary systems where human beings live. Similarly, those influenced by the mode of darkness are subjected to various types of misery and live in the animal kingdom. So this is part of Narada's instruction to King Prajini Bhadishat to help him understand the futility of his big Karmakanda program. And by loosening that attachment that he has for his Karmakanda program, to move to the transcendental position like his predecessor kings in his line of lineage. It's a very unique way that he's going about this because of the person. The person is pious but attached. Like in the case of King Chitraketu, he was pious, but even more attached than King Prajinivari. So he had to go through a lot of suffering before he could be detached, before he could even hear transcendental knowledge. In this case, so that suffering took place by the arrangement of Angira Muni to make it possible for him to have a son who would then die shortly by very wicked means. The co-queens of Chitraketu poisoned the son out of envy. Anyway, because Chitraketu was more attached than King Prajinivari, he had to suffer first. In the case of King Prajinivari, Narada's not just giving him transcendental knowledge, but first he's giving him a nice story. Once upon a time there was a king, and it just happens to be you. But we'll give him a different name. Instead of calling him King Prajinivari, we'll call him King Puranjana. And then he tells the life story of King Puranjana. Then he goes back and tells, actually, that King Puranjana is you, or anyone that is desiring happiness in this created world, in the realm of the Asat. And in order to get that enjoyment, there are certain things that one needs. And for starters, one needs material intelligence. Like, you know, go to the university and get some material intelligence, so that you can fulfill material desires, because you need material intelligence to fulfill material desire. So work hard. Get that certificate. So now you can go get a job and you can earn some money. You can get your material enjoyment. You can get that job because you're helping others get material enjoyment and they'll pay for it. And so will you. In the form of attachment to bondage to material activity through fruitive work. But King Puccini Bari is on a little bit higher level. He wants his fruitive activities by turning to religious performances. And so that elevates him from this dog-eat-dog material civilization of Ugra Karma to the niceties of fruitive activities in the heavenly realm. But it's the same principle, just of a different color. Shukla. So, by goodness, Shukla is white. So that's the color or a feature of goodness. And such persons engage in prescribed religious activity. And that's what karma is. What most people are doing in this world is not that. They're doing vikarma, left and right and sideways and up and down. Try to find an occupation. This is a challenge. Try to find an occupation that is not contaminated by something that's going to directly promote something sinful. Try. Medicine. But people that are engaged in the medical profession, these, you know, allopathic medicine, they have to do so many horrible things to be a successful physician. And just even to get that degree. You know, so many things. Or become an IT person. You're just like, you know, you're sterile. You just do something. You just like figure out how to make a software program. But towards what end is that software program being applied? Well, I'm just doing the software program. I didn't pull the trigger, Your Honor. It's just, I made the gun. Etc. Follow it. Consider. You know, what's something that isn't contaminated by the application of that something that's sinful. It's very challenging because this is Kali Yuga. We have to have a livelihood, and either directly or indirectly, it's implicating us in our work with something that's sinful, because the whole society is sinful. It's what makes the thing go round. It's very challenging. There's possibilities, but it's very challenging. So, we'll spend a little time with the Ugra Karma notion. The verse from Bhagavad Gita, Prabhupada says in the purport, right in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna describes the activities on this earthly plane that the demoniac engage in. It's from chapter 16, the divine and demoniac. And it's the Ugra Karma term is the demoniac as opposed to the divine. The divine is where the mind is fixed upon the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And because of that, all one's activities are for his pleasure. Because otherwise, how can you fix your mind upon the Supreme Personality of Godhead and do something that's just nasty? It doesn't work. You have to forget the Personality of God. Close your eyes and pretend that you something and just move on like... Anyway, so here's the verse. Chapter 16, text number 9. Etam drishtim avastabhya nashtatmano alpabodayaha prabhavanti ugra karmana kshayaya jagato hitaha. Following such conclusions, the demoniac who are lost to themselves and have no intelligence engage in unbeneficial, horrible works meant to destroy the world. Ugra karma. Prabhupada takes that phrase, ugra karma, and it becomes one of his favorite phrases that appears again and again in various places in his writings. He calls ugra karma different things besides horrible, pungent activities, nasty activities, vicious activities. And it's the nature of modern, let's say, keep it very simple, modern urbanization. To build these cities, it takes very, 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 very intense labor. Because it's so unnatural. I mean, just take the sewage system. How do you deal with that? I know a devotee, he no longer does this job, but he was involved with the, and they give it a nice perfumed name, department of something, I forget what they call it. And they just deal with the sewage for a whole big city of Chicago. And he was describing, you know, what they do. It was in Chicago, and one time there was a big downpour of rain that lasted, like you get here in India, for, you know, days. Just downpours and downpours. So what happens, I didn't know this, but he explained it. It all goes into these, you know, water drainage arrangements so that the streets don't flood, so they have it goes down into the underground. And it goes into those, whatever they call those things. You know, the rainwater, just like, shh. But when it becomes flooded and flooded and flooded, it's just, they have to do something. So what they did was, they opened the valve that allowed it to go into something or other river, and then a river went into the something or other lake, and there was E. coli bacteria that was, it was poisonous. And people were getting sick just going bathing in the lake or swimming in the lake. And it lasted for almost a month. Because, you know, the one water merges with the other water. But anyway, so rather than an education on sewage treatment, it's nasty. It's nasty. But, you know, to have big cities, you have to have some place where all that stuff can go. Anyway, a devotee, you've heard this term footprint, or particularly carbon footprint. A devotee that I know in the Washington, D.C. area gave me a National Geographic compact disc, CD, where they, through... Literally, they take from a baby to death, and how much stuff an average American uses in the course of their lifetime. And they start with diapers. You know, how much stuff in the course of one child, how many trees, how many barrels of oil, you know, to make diapers, and how much of this and that, and they put it in front of somebody's house and piled up all the trees and all the barrels of oil and all the stuff just to take care of that part of their life. And everything from how many gallons of water that you use or an average American will use in the course of their life. And they indicated 1 gallon was a little plastic duck, about that big. And they showed, you know, when you put the water that goes into the sink, and the water that goes into the toilet, and the water that goes into the shower, how many little ducks in the course of one's lifetime. And, you know, it started, so they explained the whole thing and then showed the ducks from the sink and then down onto the floor of the bathroom and then down the stairs and out the front door and out in front of the house, and the whole street was filled with ducks, and just down the street to the lake, and the lake became filled with ducks. Like, you know. And then clothing. And, you know, all the things that people use in the course of their life. So the consumption is just outrageous. And the labor to produce all that stuff is outrageous. And all that energy of human resource that's meant for another purpose. Altogether another purpose. I mean, basics, okay, but altogether another purpose is lost because people are so busy working so hard to get those things that are going to make them happy that never make them happy. It never makes you happy. Just like, you know, the fish out of water. Give the fish a nice television set. Give him a nice hammock to lie in and some lemonade and sunglasses and all kinds of nice amenities, but he's not happy until he's in the water again. So we're in an artificial environment where we're thinking we just need more stuff and then we can become happy. But it never makes us happy. Because the thing that's going to make us happy is to be in the natural environment where we belong, in the spiritual atmosphere. And in this material atmosphere, no amount or combination of anything is going to make us happy. And yet we're driven, like Vedanta Chaitanya Prabhu was pointing out yesterday. We're attached, not like a little inclined, we're attached, we're addicted to fruitive activity. And we even import that fruitive activity, as was discussed last night, into our spiritual life. We're addicts. We're junkies. We're hooked. We have a fruitive activity addiction. And that keeps one in this material world. Ugra karma. It's nasty, and to do it, and the outcome is also nasty. And that's our happiness. That's our ambition. And we go to school to learn how to make more of it. Combined with those fruitive activities, they're sinful activity. Directly, vikarma, forbidden. And we're invariably engaged in those things. Even if you pay taxes, supposing you have a nice mode of goodness livelihood, but because you're a citizen, you have to pay taxes. So you pay taxes to the government that does ugra karma activity and sinful activity. You're implicated. It doesn't like just wash away, take a bath, and it's gone. It's something that you're held responsible for. So that suffering condition follows just by getting a material body in its Kali Yuga. What to do? What's a nice guy to do? What's the solution? And those lower planets, they're heavily populated. It's like a pyramid. there's less at the top and it becomes broader, and the base is very, very broad. Interesting in this list, besides the seven, Atala, Vitala, Sutala, Tatala, Mahatala, Rasatala, Patala, that's seven. Then there's the animal kingdom in this realm, so it's kind of like an invasion or something. The lower seven out of the 14 planetary systems also are where the animal kingdom resides within this Bhumandala. But then Bhu and Bhuvar, the next above, just like as in Gayatri Mantra, or as the seven upper planetary systems, it's we're just above the middle in the earthly realm, in the human form of life, largely the mode of passion. Just like Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, those who worship the demigods, they attain the heavenly realm. Those who are engaged in the mode of passion, worshiping people, you know, this prime minister or that sports hero or that Bollywood star or this rock singer or something like that. And it goes on. It's not, no news to anybody. People worship those people, largely in this passionate realm. So they stay in this passionate realm or go down to the lower planets or the animal kingdom. But this Bhumandala and Bhuvar Loka, it's between, Bhuvar Loka is, according to the structure of the universe, it's between us and the heavenly realm. And the heavenly realm is Svargaloka. So, who knows what those planetary regions are like, what the population does in those realms. It's not detailed so much in the fifth canto. But in the Brihad Bhagavatamrita, there's a very nice description of Maharloka, Janaloka, and Tapaloka. It's described because Gopal Kumar goes there. Spend a little bit of time. It's like an embellishment for this. Not critical for the class, but it's nice. Maharloka is a place where very qualified grihasthas go who aren't yet pure in their devotion. But they're attached. They're detached from gross forms of sense gratification. They're attached to the personality of Godhead. But they enjoy not just serving the personality of Godhead, but they enjoy the sacrifice itself. And so in Maharloka, they're engaged in yajñas. We know some people that they really like yajñas. They just go from one yajña to the next yajña. Just engaged in yajñas. And they're not interested in Maharloka. They're not interested in big family life. They're interested in yajñas. Because when they perform those yajñas, they're not just conceptually understanding that when they offer oblations into the fire, that the Supreme Lord is receiving those oblations. But they're in such an elevated state of consciousness that the Lord reciprocates and He appears from the fire, extending His hands and receiving their offerings of grain and ghee. And He consumes them. So they like the yajñas. They like having long yajñas, because as soon as the yajña is over, the Lord disappears. So you have to hurry up and prepare the next yajña and begin again. And then He appears again. And Janaloka is above Maharloka. And in Tapaloka, it's brahmacharis only. We have a few brahmacharis here, but no grihastha is permitted. And the activity in tapaloka is tapa. They engage in austerity, but it's not like, you know, ugra tapa. It's the tapa of controlling the mind. So they're engaged in meditation. And in their meditation, it's not like, you know, meditating on the void. They're meditating on the form of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and he appears. Like we read in the Bhagavatam that Dhruva, within his heart, he saw the form of the Lord. Well, in Tapaloka, they're continuously seeing the form of the Lord, non-stop. So they don't like to stop meditating. They are meditation fans. And after days and days and days of absorbed meditation, they take a meditation break and then they have philosophical discussions. Very high philosophical discussions. Those of you that may have read prayers by the personified Vedas, where there's a discussion by the personified Vedas and the four Kumaras, you read that and it's like, what are they talking about? It's so far up there. And that's what they do in Tapaloka, when they take a little meditation break. And they take a little prasad, little rest, and go back and meditate for days and days. And that's what they do in Tapaloka. It's also described that during the nighttime of Brahma, because the topmost planet is Satyaloka or Brahmaloka, and during the daytime of Brahma, the full, he recreates each day. He gets up in the morning. Does his morning sadhana. And then fixes his mind upon the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And then he recreates that which during the nighttime was destroyed. He has something to do every day. And during the, at the end of his day, there's a partial devastation. Partial devastation. So not the whole universe is destroyed, but this place where we are is destroyed. And the next place above it is also destroyed. The place where the passionate people hang out. There's a long period, 100 years of drought, no rain. Everything gets dry. And then a little flame. And what happens when things are really dry and there's a little flame? Bursts into flames. It gets so hot because these planets are engulfed in flame. That in Maharloka, woo, it's too hot. So they get in their vimanas and they go above Janaloka to Tapaloka. They're allowed to hang out for a little while in Tapaloka because it's too hot down here in Maharloka. These planets are ashes. And then the ashes are dissolved with downpours of rain. So everything's flooded. All that happens during Brahma's night. And then as his morning approaches, the water subsides or recedes. And then Brahma wakes up and he has to put those planets and all the life forms and stuff back together again. That's what he does. Subcreation. So it's not without its problems. Even you go to Maharloka, above Swargaloka. The heavenly planets, they're also destroyed. Maharloka, Bhu, Bhuvar and Svar, all three planetary systems, they're ashes during Brahma's night. It seems like nice and comfy and cozy up there in Tapaloka and Brahmaloka. But Brahma also knows, my days are numbered. And when it's over, it's over. The whole universe is annihilated. By a similar method. So it's not a safe place wherever you are. Abrahma bhuvana loka purnar arvarta norjuna, Krishna says very simply in Bhagavad Gita. From the highest planet, Brahmaloka, down to the lowest planet, all are places of suffering wherein repeated birth and death take place. So that's the advice that's being given to King Prachinibari by Narada. Wherever you go, this method that you have of achieving the heavenly realm by pious, fruitive activity, it can take you up to the heavenly realm. Above the heavenly realm, there are further destinations within this created position. But all of them have this taint or tinge of ignorance and passion, even up to Brahmaloka, because it's part of the creative realm where the modes of nature are active. So however good you are, however elevated by fruitive activity one may become, it's not preferred. It's not recommended by Krishna or here by Narada to King Prachinibari. And then there's the impersonalists. And the impersonalists, they recognize this because they've become sufficiently elevated in the quality of goodness that they have enough detachment from the temporary thing, from the asat realm. So they're interested in the sat realm, the eternal realm, the realm of Brahman. But they don't have proper understanding due to not having devotee association. And even if they have devotee association, they reject it because they have enmity towards the personality of Godhead. They got an issue with He who is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. They don't like that. They want to be supreme. I'm supreme. We'll share the supremacy. You and me and all of us will just get together and love one another and be supreme. That's democracy. That's fair. But that there's somebody above us, we don't like that idea. It's envy. Dvesha. Raga dvesha samutena. Dvandva mohena bharata. It's built right in to the, going back a few chapters, where Narada is giving his allegory to King Prachinibari. He specifically mentions the king, Paranjana, gets in his chariot with his bow and arrows to go into the forest to hunt an animal. And there's the reins of these wild, or not wild, very powerful five powerful horses. And there's the reins, the steering mechanism for the horses. And then there's two posts upon which the steering mechanism are secured. And it's these same two, raga and dvesha. That is the ill disposition towards the personality of Godhead, dvesha, and the coveting the Lord's position. So that turns out to be hankering and lamenting. And that's material life. When we're pursuing material happiness, we have this fruit of intention. There's this program of hankering something we don't have. And lamenting when we don't get it, or we get it, it doesn't satisfy. Either way, get it or don't get it, it's lamenting. And you get it for a while, and then it's gone, and it's further lamentation. It's triple dose. Lamentation, 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 hankering. And that's what's driving the mind, or directing the mind. Behind the whole show is the supersoul, observing the desire of the living entity, advising us otherwise. Like one small child yesterday asked, why doesn't Krishna talk with us? And the answer is, Krishna does talk with us. We just have beans in our ears. We can't hear. Because we have this strong desire for material enjoyment and the lamentation program that's currently running. We're so busy with lamenting over the way the circumstance is and hankering to make it different than it is now so we can get some enjoyment. We're so busy with that, we don't hear. Just like when we're chanting, we don't hear. Krishna, Krishna, Krishna. And Krishna comes and we're not paying attention. Yeah. We all experience it. We're not hearing. The mind wants to go somewhere else. It's pathetic. And that's our situation. We're contaminated by this Raja and Tama situation. What to do? So we, with faith in the process of sadhana bhakti, we continue because it's the means given within the scriptures for this age of Kali to get out of this circumstance. And if we sincerely take shelter of the process and the deliverers of that process and ultimately Krishna, then gradually the Bhagavatam describes that process by which the soul again becomes qualified to be acting in their relationship with Krishna once again in their position of loving service. It's all very nicely described. In a nutshell, it's described in those nice verses from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 2. The process of devotional service. You unpack those verses just as Srila Prabhupada presented them in his arrival prayer, or he presents them in his Bhagavad Gita purports, and it's all there in a very condensed form. And the rest of the Bhagavatam is unpacking all of that, just as Narada is doing for King Paranjan. As you're going through verse by verse, you may not get, like, you know, the big picture. But you get the big picture in 6-7 verses in the second chapter. But it's too condensed, we're too thick, so we don't get it. But it's all there. So again and again, the Bhagavatam is pulling us from this tama and rajas position to the beginning to sattva position, and then to our natural position of service to Krishna. Eternal position of service to Krishna. Just by this nice process of hearing. It's already 9:35, so I'm going to abruptly end there and see if there's any discussion.
Maharaj, just stay in this Kali Yuga. We use so many things which has very detrimental consequences. And we, even as devotees, we are very callous about using things and meaning, how does it affect our devotional service? In the name of even while utilizing as Yukta Vairagya, there are many things that we use which has great harm to the so many other living entities. So how does that in turn affect our devotional service, and when does it not?
Nice question. I'll give a short answer to some, what could become a long answer or a big topic. Adjustments are to be made according to the example of our founder Acharya. Srila Prabhupada established standards. He took the teachings of Lord Chaitanya into the Western part of the world and again brought it back to India, and by his example he set certain standards. So let's take one of them, and that's milk. The whole dairy industry is nasty. Prabhupada spoke again and again and again and again and again and again and again about protection of cows, not the opposite. But the dairy industry wouldn't be successful if on the other end they didn't have cow slaughter. Just, you know, the cost of milk would be a different price. So what to do? Prabhupada gave us two principles. One is we don't deprive Krishna of milk because he should be offered milk. But what we should, so we use milk in our diet, but what we should do is show by example the protection of cows. Ideally, The standard that Prabhupada wanted was where we have large centers that are well established, they can show by example cow protection and in fact take the milk from the cows and offer that to Krishna. And that's the milk that we would consume. That's ideal. Prior to that stability and capacity to do that, we don't deprive Krishna of milk. But we teach by our words and envision our coming to the position where we can show by example also. In general, what's important in the Yukta Vairagya principle is not to be lazy in our contemplations. The purpose of engaging things is, in urban situations, is for the purpose of preaching, for the purpose of extending the greater value of extending the message of Krishna consciousness, pure devotion to Krishna, surpasses the other. But we can just become complacent. The other means the negative things that are involved in urban life. Very artificial. Upon ourselves and other living beings around us, certainly animals and other lower forms of life. Very vicious. But we reside in, if we're Krishna conscious, we reside in cities for the purpose of extending the opportunity to many, 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 many people, which we couldn't do if we didn't reside in cities or in your place of work. So I'm not engaged in places of work, but you all are, and you can contact people that I can't contact. So it's part of your responsibility to somehow or another carry in your heart the wish to somehow or another bring the opportunity of Krishna consciousness to other people in your workplace. And that's why you're there. It's one of the reasons why you're there, is to extend that opportunity to others. At least be Krishna's instrument if he so inspires you or gives you the intelligence or creates a situation where you can. And etc. The downside is we're just lazy. And we just like, okay, great. Now it's authorized. I can do all this ugra karma things and, you know, it gets sterilized. It doesn't get sterilized if we're in the mood of enjoyment or trying to be part of that, like, you know, a successful sense enjoyer in the whole program. That's the downside. We become contaminated if we're not in Krishna consciousness. Or one of the statements that Prabhupada made was, we shouldn't even walk across a lawn if we're not doing it in Krishna service. Because they're living entities that we're stepping on. Grass and insects and whatever. You shouldn't even do that if you're not doing it in Krishna service. So what to speak of all the other things. All things. The consciousness that we should be developing and carrying is each deed, each thing we do is for a service to Krishna. That's Yukta Vairagya. And then there's protection. And if we're not in that consciousness, we're implicated. Just by existing, we're implicated. Just by breathing, by drinking water, by existing, we're implicated. So it's not sufficient just that we're, you know, we have tilak and nice dhoti and bead bag and Hari Bol Prabhu and, you know, we're devotees. We have to be in that consciousness. And we have to help one another to stay fixed in that consciousness. And that's the adjusting factor in the Yukta Vairagya principle. It's the consciousness behind the activity that can uplift us beyond the contaminations of the atmosphere that we're in. Okay. Sometimes, when one's heart is ready to accept Krishna and love Krishna, why our mind doesn't cooperate? What should be done? Well, our mind is used to being in charge. And you know what it's like when somebody's in charge and you say, okay, you're not in charge anymore. Huh? No way. And it's a tug of war. The mind wants that. Mind's used to being at the top, even ruling the intelligence, which is supposed to be above and giving direction to the mind. It's actually the senses that are above the mind, but the mind thinks, you know, it's me. The senses can't do anything without me. I'm number 6 out of the 5. Or, you know, number 16 out of the 15. I'm in charge here. Arjuna asked the same question in a different way. You know, what is it that even when I make up my mind to do something, then it happens that I don't do that something. It's as if I'm controlled by some other entity. What's that all about? How does it happen like that? And the answer is, Krishna gives kamesha, krodesha, rajoguna samudbhava. One becomes overwhelmed. The mind is influenced by this contact with the mode of passion. The mode of passion says, I want to enjoy. That's the mode of passion. And in contact with the mode of passion, there's kama. There's a particular type of enjoyment one wants. Desires arise in the mind. And when those desires are not satisfied, because they're never satisfied, then it's krodha. One is impelled by that contact with the mode of passion. And we don't want to let go. We don't like the fire. We don't like getting burned. But we don't like to let go of this, I want to enjoy. Because we're meant for enjoyment. We're part and parcel of Krishna. And he's the supreme enjoyer. So we're meant for enjoyment. It's natural. But we just have this material conception that says, I want to enjoy apart from Krishna. And look at all these nice senses I have. 5 working senses, 5 knowledge acquiring senses. This nice mind. So the mind doesn't want to let go of that position. So we have to train the mind, or discipline the mind, or purify the mind, so it can let go and find real happiness, or transcendental happiness, which far surpasses this other so-called happiness. Anything else? Yes.
In yesterday's class, we heard that like Krishna takes tests of devotees, and
Krishna does what with devotees?
Tests. And
okay.
We also hear like he's very kind those devotees. So how does like these two go together? When there is kindness, taking tests.
Tests are nice. It's like, you know, an athlete that has some athletic event. It's nice. It's a test. Or, you know, Janmashtami comes and it's fasting. It's nice. It's a test in one sense, but it's nice. Or some, you know, we ask Krishna to cleanse our heart from all material contamination, and Krishna starts cleansing our heart from all material contamination, and that's a test because we're attached to our contamination. But it's nice. Krishna is the supreme nice. Here's one way to think of it that makes the mind feel happy. When we return to the kingdom of God, when we return to Krishna Loka, there's no more contamination to deal with. There's not going to be any false ego. There's not going to be any envy, jealousy. There's no impurity. So to get there, there has to be quality. So Krishna's making sure that the quality is there. And that's the test. Because if our genuine ambition is not like just salvation, but to be serving Krishna in a uninterrupted, loving, serving mood, then we have to qualify ourselves, and that's good. That's nice. Krishna's helping us to get there. That's what those tests are. Because we can then see, prior to entering Krishna Loka, we'll see where our contaminations are. That's where the test tells us where we're okay, where we need some improvement. That's good. Krishna's being very kind. And on the other side of the exam, it's not just like party time. It's unalloyed loving service. Eternally. Ever increasing transcendental happiness in the kingdom of God. Very nice. Okay, I'm going to end there because of time. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Grantham Raj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.